the Boss Man Show special guest. We got a special guest out of Nashville by way of Memphis, all over the place. Can be she was talking off air about our vernaculars from our different cities. It's Mary Edwards here, the visionary, single woman Jones. She got a lot going on. We'll talk about all of that here on the Boss Man Show tonight. Hey, how you doing? Good to talk to you on the show finally. What's up?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
No doubt. I was going to ask you about your background, first and foremost, if you know who you are, man. So tell us about how you got started in business. What was your trigger point to get into business and work for yourself and make money on your own, having your own different kind of hustle, jack of all trades? Tell us all about your start.
Okay. Well, I like to call myself the Jill of many skills. I actually meant to wear that shirt today, but I couldn't find it. So I wore another Single Woman Jones shirt instead. But I actually just started as a side hustle, to be honest. In college, I used to write resumes, write other people's papers. Don't tell anybody about my plagiarism. But I used to write other people's papers, just all types of different like writing things for others so that I could just get a little extra money. And the couple years before what we now call as the pandemic or quarantine, I really kind of like got a little bit more notoriety. People started kind of recommending me through word of mouth. And then from there, I had a day job, of course, but was just doing that on the side. And then when the pandemic hit, it kind of pivoted from me doing events and resumes to helping people with their businesses, as well as just kind of branching off into like really doing it on my own, because I had essentially gotten laid off.
Yeah, like it's mighty strange, but not strange, how the pandemic made a lot of people entrepreneurs full time now, because you know, you thought you had a job, and then All of a sudden, on my birthday, March 11th of 2020, when I was playing the Hawks game, got worried that everything was canceled. So forever, my birthday is the day that the quarantine and the pandemic hit, because my birthday week, March 11th. Now, I will sit up here and tell y'all, no lie, on March 14th, I was in BB King's downtown Nashville having a birthday party. I ain't gonna lie to y'all.
We didn't know how serious it was.
You know, but on Twitter, they was like, look at Nashville. I was one of the fools out there. I said, I'm celebrating my birthday. Yes, everyone should shut down. I'm celebrating my birthday one last. It was a rainy night, but I get more to celebrate my birthday. So I did it. So who knew that was going to change all our lives forever? You got consistently laid off and forced you into doing what you're doing on a high level now. But a lot of people now are entrepreneurs now with businesses, doing things online now, and never going back to that 9-to-5 life ever again. So for you, do you feel freer now that you're doing your own thing, not having to be shackled by a time clock and say, hey, these hours you are here, you mine?
Well, actually, I did pick up a day job recently, but for about a year and a half, I guess, a little bit more than that, I was working for myself, and I felt free because I could make my own schedule. I got to do a lot of the things that what I used to say, I'm living in the days that I pray for, where I could get up, go for a walk, exercise, make my breakfast, just kind of take things at my own pace and then get into whatever the day, you know, whatever I had set for the day. Mm-hmm. Now it's a little bit different because I do have a day job. Before the pandemic, I worked in real estate. So I got back into real estate, working on getting my license. So I work as a transaction coordinator just to be able to add that other thing under my belt, before the end of the year.
It's funny you say that. I'm like, I'm 3 credits away from getting a minor at TSU in real estate. I just didn't want to stay around for each semester before I get a minor in real estate. I'm literally 1 class away from having a minor.
Wow.
From Tennessee State. But I want to get on with my career in radio. I didn't want to stick around a semester. So, but
I understand that. But man, like real estate is so fascinating. I worked as the office manager for a huge company here, and I basically started their office in Nashville. And with that, I learned so much about real estate and just different neighborhoods, how things are done, the process of buying and selling. It's just all really fascinating to know like the inner workings of that. And then just differences in brokerages too. And there's so much you can do with investing and it's all really interesting to me.
do you feel a catch 22 though, with all the gentrification going on in Nashville? Because you know, it's really affecting our people. You know what I'm saying? Especially in North from East Nashville, we're getting forced out.
You know, in the hood. Well, this affects me too.
Yeah,
I still live in the hood. I live right in the heart of North Nashville. And it was, why I say it was interesting is because being around, I was also the only person of color in the office for a very long time. So it's almost like you stick out like a sore thumb, but at the same time, you're invisible. So you're privy to conversations that people don't necessarily think you understand, or, you know, they don't care about having those conversations in front of you because they don't think you know what's going on. But you find out a lot about what people really think about the people living in these neighborhoods. Who is, you know, like an evil developer coming in to push Black people out versus people who really do care about the communities they're affecting when they build these new tall and skinny homes, as we like to call them, or just like North Nashville and stuff like near where I stay. You have where I guess you feel a sense of pride because you have like Black owned businesses like Slim Huskies, Willie B's, and things coming up on Buchanan. But then on these side streets and stuff, you still have like a house that's been here for 30 years, and then next to it, it's a duplex or two tall and skinnies or something like that. It's strange because pretty soon, you know, you'll be seeing that little house eventually is going to disappear, you know.
Do eminent domain or getting offered an offer that's not really good, but it looks good on paper.
Exactly. And a lot of people don't know about eminent domain too. And that's something I learned about actually living in Memphis, just knowing people who were in real estate there, not knowing a whole lot about it, but I worked for a nonprofit organization. That's where I first heard the term. And then I was like, oh, they can do that? You know what I mean? So. Yeah,
because that's how the Falcon State Stadium got built in Atlanta, eminent domain. So, and also they use taxes to do it too.
Like your property taxes. I had a family member, a cousin, she's in her 60s, and she had a house in South Nashville, and she would tell me about how her property taxes were going up and how they were trying to push them out the neighborhood. But I think she may have sold and got a pretty good deal, but that was just because she, you know, had someone trustworthy, I think. And a lot of times that's the thing too, like these people will send you these notices in the mail, we want to buy your home.
Or they call you, it says scam likely on my phone when they call you.
Yeah, trying to get you out of your home. When my grandmother was still living, she had people send her stuff and call and all the time. And because these people are elderly, they're, you know, taking advantage, you know, talking fast and over talking and convincing people to do things they wouldn't normally do. I think if there's anything that burns me up the most about the whole gentrification thing is the preying on the elderly.
Yes, exactly. And you know what's crazy about it? I took my father to go appeal his taxes down to the little Second Avenue Howard building. I appealed my taxes. And then right down the street from me, they built up what some of them tall and skinnies and whatever they building. I mean, literally, like, really? You know, I call them tornado targets. That's what I call them.
Tornado targets. I'm about to use that one. They do look like if you blow hard enough, they're going to fall over.
Yes, the tornado targets. And speaking of North Nashville, the tornado happened last March the 2nd or 3rd. It was funny. The Hawks played the Grizzlies that night. And I drove to town to see my father. And I know what was going on. You know, tornado going on in Nashville. I'll come see out 24 going up North Nashville way, whoa, whoopie, whoo. And I don't know what's going on. And I'm looking at my phone, tornado, what? I know it's raining like crazy and thundering.
Right.
But the Hawks for the Grizzlies that night in Atlanta, I drove up here and I was like, wow. So I knew that was going, I didn't know that was going on either. So, but in going over North Nashville, I had people affected over on Arthur and, you know, on D.B. Todd. And you see on the highway, still kind of dark over there.
We was messed up for... We was out of power for at least a week. So we would like come during the day and stay here, make sure the house was fine and, you know, operate with the windows open. It was freezing. But then we would go in the evenings and stay with my aunt. But it was a mess. Like, and I had a job then that was affected by the tornado and then the pandemic. So it was a lot, it affected a lot of small businesses, like back to back. It was like a tornado and then the pandemic. Yes. And it was like, what the heck?
Then the Nashville, the bombing too. There was a bombing in Nashville too. Like,
we had a rough go at it, okay?
What the hell's going on in Nashville? I was like, I said to him, Dad, you want to move to Atlanta? No, son, y'all too fast down there. You come down here, you enjoy yourself. Nah, I like Nashville. Okay, you like, you don't get bombed, but okay. That's what I said.
Yeah, that was insane. That was crazy. One of my brother's friends, I think, lived in that area and was affected by it as well. Over here in North Nashville, we just didn't have phone. We didn't have Wi-Fi. We didn't have phone power. It was kind of rough for a few days, but Nashville has, we've been through a lot here in the last
months. Now, I think with a lot of jobs being created, the resume writing piece is very important. I'll be honest with you. I ain't never had to use a resume because of what I do. Mm-hmm. Radio is kind of a little bit different than a regular job having a resume. So for our listeners out here listening, what are some tips that you can give them that you ain't going to charge for? Because I know you charge to do that. For them to spruce up their resume. And I would give an offline, not expert tip. All previous jobs put them in past tense. But I'll let the expert tell you the rest.
Seriously. Seriously. If it's a past job, put it in that. I mean, I can't stress that more. Like, yes, if it is a past job, please put it in the past tense. So I actually do career development as a whole. So not only do I upgrade resumes, write resumes, but also will coach you for your interview, help you with negotiation, for your compensation packages, the whole gambit. And that I learned just being in corporate America so long. I've had a job since I was 14 years old. So I have learned a lot about navigating work culture, different types of people. And then as far as resumes go, to piggyback off what you said about the past tense, make sure you're also only including what's relevant. Like, we don't need to know your very first job you worked when you was 14. We just want to go back about 10 years. That's what most employees are usually looking for.
Now, do you say put your education in the year on there or just put the job? No. I feel like sometimes the year is used against you almost.
Yes. So I take, like, I had a client more recently who has 24 years of experience. And while I put 24 years of experience in their summary, I remove the dates on their education because it will date you, and or employers will try to figure out how old you are. And then sometimes kind of inadvertently have a bias because you're older, which is technically discrimination. So age discrimination. So yes, I always remove the years unless it is somebody who recently, like in the last year or two, graduated and this is a entry level position and you're trying to kind of break into the field. Sometimes it helps. It just kind of depends on the scenario, but for most cases I leave it off.
Yeah, because like you said, they can kind of figure out, okay, you graduated in 2011, okay, you probably like 22, something like that. Okay, add some. Yeah, they ain't gonna do the math on you. So yeah. Mm-hmm. I've told people this, and you know, with my non-expert, you know, thoughts about it, you know, don't do that. You do that because, and okay, I ain't gonna lie to you, some folk names be
I should have known this was gonna come up.
Some folk name, look, I ain't gonna lie, some names I see that I guess it, I know what they are.
So that is a thing. I've been asked this before, like, you know, what do I do about that? So as a person whose name has been butchered my entire life, you would not think that because my name is just Mary, but as a person whose name has been butchered my whole life, I have been really careful about people and their names and what I do with them when it comes to a resume. But I know that people have the reaction that, like you just said, if it's a what we like to call an ethnic name, we can tell that person's probably Black or Asian based on, you know, the spelling or what have you. For us, the number of consonants, extra, you know, periods, hyphens, exclamation points, apostrophes and such. But I usually, if it's something that is, I know will be difficult to pronounce or is super long or, you know that they're gonna think it's urban, that word that they like to use. Yes. I use initials or I use a short name.
Yes.
When you get there, you can tell people your preference. Like, once you get the job, you say, I prefer to be called Wop Bop Beverly and Boo, but whatever. Just to get your foot in the door, you know, do what you can in the way of, like, sometimes I hyphenate my name. My name is Mary Ashley. Sometimes I hyphenate my name as Mary Ashley, depending on the job I'm applying for.
No doubt. Like, I ain't gonna lie, when I see some names, I'm like, Lord, but I'm still gonna talk to you. But I'm gonna say, your mama was high at birth.
And that's the thing, you can't help with your name. Like, I was named after my grandmother, yes. And I am the seventh grandchild, and only one of them before me out of the seven is a boy. So there were five other opportunities to name somebody Mary, but I ended up being Mary. You know what I mean? I don't let people play with my name, but I recognize that it has a unique spelling. People will mispronounce it. So I don't have a problem with correcting people as long as, you know, I do so politely, which I recommend if you're in that situation when interviewing or what have you. But yeah, use a short name, use a abbreviated name. I will say this. If somebody asks you, can they shorten your name? I typically say no.
Yeah, no.
Like, if someone tries to nickname you, I'm absolutely against that.
Yeah, like, I have people, what does JR stand for? Whatever you want to stand for. That's my answer. Why are you being so smart? Just go with JR.
That's what I prefer to be called.
You don't need to know what that stands for.
Yeah.
If you got a half a brain, you figure out probably it stands for. Like, what does it stand for?
Very rarely is it like Jerome Robertson. It's like so-and-so Junior.
You know what's funny? When somebody might say, Junior, who the hell is that? I don't know who that is. Right. Try again. I had to go speak to a school. We're here with Junior, the boss man. Junior, the boss.
But the letters are capital.
Who in the black? I sit in my seat. I'm like, who's that?
So I used to do that too. Like, people will call my name and they'll go, Marie, Mari, Mariah. And I'm like, and now wait a minute. And if they don't correct, I'm like, it's Mary. But like, somebody called me earlier and was like, can I speak to Mari? And I was like, this is Mary. And I'm like, oh, sorry. So I tried to find, like, you know, polite ways to correct people.
Mary, like the Virgin Mary, but spelled differently, shouties and shoutettes, you know? Shouties. Yes, players and playettes. That's another one I use from Atlanta. You know, players and playettes, you know? Yeah. So what they call your dad, you don't worry about that. You just call me what I told you to call me.
Jabroni. Yeah, right.
You had me tap into my rock mode, Jabroni. Yeah, calling me by the wrong name.
It's been a long time.
Well, I could Booker T, sucker. What about Booker T, see?
Now, see, I did kind of watch wrestling a little bit. Now, that's something I might know this much about.
Man, look, I watched that junk Mondays, Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays.
My grandmother liked wrestling, so I watched it on occasion.
And also, we had wrestling matches after church, too. Out in the front of the grass of church.
Church members.
Yeah, we had the grass stains on them suits, getting in trouble. Dry cleaners, everything. Yeah, they hate that. But look, I had to get do the pedigree one time and give him a DDT after church. That's what I do. You know, you watch the wrestling movies, you want to try them on somebody. So I try them on somebody. I didn't care. Like, you know, like,
now I had a guy cousin, and so we used to try those wrestling moves on each other because we're the same age, around the same age. We were the only two like grandkids kind of around the same age, so we kind of grew up like brother and sister. But yeah, I remember the DDT and the people's eye elbow and all
rock bottom, stone cold,
rock bottom, yeah,
the figure four leg lock, the walls of Jericho, the ankle lock. I'm doing all this.
I forgot about all this.
The spinner Rooney, the super kick.
Yeah.
The only thing I didn't try was jumping off the railing and trying to knock. I didn't try those moves. Nah. I did the way I could just stand and kick you or stun you or something. I was a mischievous child, okay? You know, doing the altar call at church, You know, they be coming to the altar. So me being the joker I am, I stung close on a dude in the middle of church that was 11 years old.
Not during an altar call, though. You was a
woman. What's funny was my dad thought it was funny. But he didn't do that to me. He thought it was funny.
I'm just imagining people standing there, like, holding hands. Like, I know altar call in my church growing up was like, you know, in the little prayer. You just DVPing somebody in the middle, somebody trying to pray for their
what's time. Funny is my homeboy waiting for the pin. Now I counted 1, 2, 3.
See.
He got in trouble. I didn't. My dad didn't care. His dad was assistant pastor. But he waited for the pin.
What, so you was a bad influence. Is what you're saying.
And he owed me about 27 days.
That don't mean nothing.
I see. He's my elder. I got it from him. He's my elder.
That's like my friend earlier today. I was telling her, I was like, you know, the more I work, I started to drink a little bit more. And she was like, yeah, I drink a lot more when I'm around you too. I was like, wait.
Wow.
He said, well, you blamed yourself first, so I figured I would just run with it.
I'm like, I was junior, yeah, no doubt.
You the elder. She like, see, her birthday's in May, mine is in November. I'm like, you the elder. I got it from you.
Yeah, February 12th, March 11th. He got it by 27 days. Learned it from him. Learned it from him. Now, this is the same joker. This joker broke my chair as a child. We were playing a little wrestling game. He broke my chair in my room.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to beat Hulk Hogan or somebody, the joker broke my chair. Like, damn, bro. Broke my chair. You know, my dad said my dad banned him from the house for a while. And he made his dad buy me another chair. He was all good at that. Your son broke my son, so he bought me another chair or else. We hear about this in church on Sunday. He bought me a chair fast. And he don't hear anybody
in church on Sunday.
Yeah, so my dad has a way to get stuff done, I must say.
Yeah. Well, I think that that is probably what I say rubbed off on me from my grandmother. And oddly enough, they call me Mary Jr. because she was a no-nonsense kind of woman who got things done. And I believe that is kind of what that's the persona, that's the thing that kind of radiates for me when I'm out in the world doing business in whatever capacity I do.
And you know what? You do something else, LinkedIn. You know, I use that for promotional purposes, but I know it's used to find jobs too. So tell us more about that, because I think a lot of people don't really know the value of LinkedIn and what it can do for your career as well.
I don't think people know that either. I mean, I say that all the time. I've had a LinkedIn since high school, college, maybe freshman year. But I know we started talking about it, I think, maybe my senior year, because I was in this like career readiness kind of class or something, my junior, senior year. And we did like ACT prep and then resume. So that's where I learned how to like write a resume in that class. And then every year I just kept it updated. No matter what, I would update it. And then whenever I got a LinkedIn, I got in the process of continuously keeping it updated. And what I learned was that you get some of your biggest opportunities from LinkedIn. And now that we're in like the social media era, or people are looking for your social presence. So you meet somebody and the first thing they ask you usually is like, you got an Instagram, you got a Facebook. And so when I meet people business, when I'm out networking, do you have a LinkedIn? So I was in, perfect example of the value of LinkedIn. I was going into Sephora one day after working an event in the mall at a different store. A young man that I had met who had asked me for, you know, just to help lend him a helping hand for the day. I worked with him and then I was going to look for like a Mother's Day gift. It was Mother's Day weekend. And I was like, oh, let me stop and pick up some concealer. So I went into Sephora, was looking for my Holy Grail concealer. And then I was like, I need face wash. So I went over to this counter or this wall display, and everything was like black and white, this brand I'd never seen before. So it caught my eye. So then the lady walks over and she's like, hey, can I help you with anything? So I'm thinking this is just, you know, sales clerk. So I'm talking to her and telling her about my bad skin and all these different things. So she's telling me about her skin. So then she's like, well, what do you do for a living? So I told her, you know, I do a myriad of things. I upgrade resumes, I throw events, I'm a consultant. For operations, for different business, small business owners. And so she said, oh, really? We're having a Juneteenth event and we need someone to throw our event. would you be interested in that? And I was like, sure. But me, I'm thinking she's just talking. Like, I don't know this lady from a can of paint. You know what I mean? Why she mm-hmm. won't. I just told her after an event. She don't know me. She was like, well, do you have a LinkedIn? I was like, sure do. So we exchanged LinkedIns. Again, I'm thinking that she's just talking, just shooting shit with me. No, sis found me on LinkedIn. And a couple of days later, she hit me up with a message and then reached out and we got to talking or whatever. But it was because my LinkedIn was updated. And I'm going to be honest with y'all. My LinkedIn, I give my LinkedIn the least amount of attention because I'm always so busy doing other people's. But on there is almost the most recent work that I've done. It's pretty recent. And so I'm sure that it is the way that it was laid out, as well as the information that was on there, the companies that I work for or what have you, that made her go like, oh, okay, this person might be reputable. And, you know, I've talked to her. She seems to be, you know, knowledgeable. Let's take a chance on her. And they did. So I was able to throw the inaugural June in the Green Hills Mall Sephora. So
wow.
LinkedIn is the bomb, okay? Don't sleep on LinkedIn.
I ain't been at mall since, I don't know, 2011, 10 maybe.
Yeah, and it's not a mall that I frequent often.
I don't be in that part of town very often, just for various reasons.
Right. Right, like you don't really have a reason. I used to actually work over there across from the mall, but I don't really have a reason to be out there very often. I just happened to be out there helping that guy with his event that he was a part of, and just wandered into the store. But it's like having your LinkedIn up to date. I can't stress that enough. And with all of my resume clients, a lot of people come, they just want their resume updated. But I always stress the LinkedIn service, and it's not just to try and upsell for more money, because I don't really charge that much for it, to be honest. But I feel like having a great resume is one thing, but when people want a quick snapshot of who you are, they're gonna go find you online. And having that set up, having a banner, can even just be the slightest change.
No doubt. And like I said, I use LinkedIn to get guests on my show and promote the show. And mm-hmm. I've got not a lot of guests from LinkedIn. Like, who I thought I would get, you know, to connect with Wade Phillips, former defense coordinator, coach, Super Bowl champion dude from the Denver Broncos, stuff like that. Anthony Amy, a guy works at BNC, you know. So a lot of people in my field, sports arena, I've connected with based on LinkedIn. I got a situation with a new distributor, new LinkedIn for my show. So you're right. It works. When I don't be on it all the time, but I use it for what I need it for. Guests, yeah, and promote the show when I post a new show.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, so I had one client. She hadn't touched her LinkedIn in Lord knows at least 3-4 years. And there was nothing really on it. But when I got done, you know, and it wasn't a whole lot because I had to build it from scratch, but it wasn't a whole lot I had to do, because a lot of the, what I call LinkedIn optimization, is not the stuff that you see on the profile. It's the back end tweaks, the technical things that mess with your visibility and stuff. But the front of her page looked really good when I got done. And I believe that is what pushes people over the edge when it becomes down to you and another applicant for a role, is having that LinkedIn together. And then for my clients, your cover letter, your resume, and your banner for your LinkedIn are going to match. So you've been branded, and that makes you appear, you know, just like it sets you apart from the other applicants too.
No doubt, for sure. And like you said, your service is actually kind of a coaching opportunity for people, because getting that second set of eyeballs on what you're doing is helpful. You know, because sometimes you get stuck in your ways, you believe what your ways do, but had a different perspective to say, hey, maybe a word or two here or there may stand out more than just what you got.
Absolutely.
So the service you offer is very essential for the improving the Black employment rate in this world, because we still lagging behind. And mm-hmm. even though we in vogue right now, so allegedly, it still needs to be better, right?
Yeah.
And so I thank you for your help and being a Black woman leading and helping that, because I respect anybody as a hustler.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, people are near and dear to my heart. I don't know why. And I say that because ever since I was a little girl, I used to go to the library every week, and I would always get, I'm always looking, I don't care what the story was, it always had to have Black people in it or on the cover or something like that. And then when I got to college, I ended up studying the African diaspora. So my minor,
yes, I love that already.
My degree is in English, with a concentration in African-American literature. And then my minor was pre-law and legal thought. But a lot of those classes that I had to take were like African-American rhetoric and things like that. So if it's about Black people, I want to know about it. Like, Black people are near and dear to my heart. So when it comes to anything or providing a service that has to do with empowering Black people, it's right up my alley, especially with Black women. So my services are for anyone. I've definitely done some males' resumes, but my services are predominantly geared towards women because we make less. And what I was really inspired by this group, Ladies Get Paid, I went to one of their events here in Nashville, and I learned a lot about the disparity in wages between men and women, but especially Black women. We make a lot less more. And a lot of times we're the person who's carrying it all. Like me, at the brokerage I used to work for, I set that place in motion. Like, I set them up for success, but I was the only person of color. I'm sure I made less than everyone, and I was not treated the best by the leadership. The people there were, you know, great, but like leadership, they didn't value me, right? And so a lot of times we as women, but even just Black people in general, we get into positions where we always feel like we need this job. Like, I need a job. Bills, we a lot of times living paycheck to paycheck, so we feel like I gotta keep my head down. I hear us say that a lot. I
just gotta, or code switch to fit in with them,
or code switch. Yeah, so I had to do a lot of speaking like this. How are you? How's your day going? Yeah, it's really great.
And so I couldn't do that to save my life. The hood would come out of me.
We got to a point where with HR, I had a discussion, and I was just like, you know, I'm tired of having to have conversations with people where I have to turn to my voice like this so that I sound better and more palatable for them, because my voice is deeper and authoritative, and I will no longer be speaking like that anymore because that's not true to myself, and I shouldn't have to alter myself in order to get along well with other people who have a preconceived bias or notion about me. And so that did not go well with them. And eventually I was forced to resign. But what I learned from that situation is to not be afraid to speak up. And what it was a Black woman in HR called me and said, "Own your narrative."
All right, back on the Boss Man Show, part two with Mary here. We had some, you know, issue with the technology, but that happens. Negroes won't let you be great. I get it, but we back. She was giving you a background about her and her previous job, her background, on her narrative, because, you know, having the code switch, talk differently to be around people that just don't look like her, it's not cool. Now, I talk to that don't show a lot of people, code switching, how I'm against it. But she had to deal with it in her office place, and it cost her to say, "Hey, nah, I'm good. I got to be myself now." So I'm going to tell your story, Mary, because I don't want to tell it for you. The floor is yours.
All right. Well, really, I was just saying, own your narrative. I had a woman reach out to me, Black woman from HR, and tell me, you know, own the narrative. You can walk away from this situation. You can allow them to fire you. And so I did. I resigned, but I found myself begging for the job because I was married to the idea that I needed this job. Like, it was my first job that I felt like was the big girl job. And I've had a lot of, like, you know, prominent corporate jobs, but like this one, I was like, this is the one. Like, this is it. I'm gonna grow with this company. I'm gonna become a director of operations. It's gonna be great. And that was not the case. So I was really heartbroken because I thought I finally found the company I was going to grow with for years and things like that. But because, like, I never wanted to really just be an entrepreneur. Like, that was like not, you know, I just wanted some extra money, you know what I mean? And to have fun, bring women together, help women out. But I wasn't like trying to be, you know, a business mogul or anything like that. But being pushed out of that situation pushed me into really believing in myself and understanding the gift that I have as far as helping other women or other people, you know, excel in their career. Like you said earlier, LinkedIn has been a huge component when it comes to setting my clients apart from other applicants. The way that I craft resumes, the years of experience I have in doing so. It's why I charge what I charge, by the way, but it's my years of experience and just learning different trends, and then also the time that I take to study, to read up on what's going on, what our recruiters looking for these days. You know, it's always, I'm always learning, investing in books. Like, I spend a lot of money on books. But yeah, that's really just the point that I was making, was just like in corporate America, as Black people, a lot of times we automatically give leadership, HR, whomever, our power. We don't assume that we have power, and we do. And so I try to let people that I come in contact with know that, for example, negotiating your compensation is just not your hourly rate. A lot of times we get stuck on that, but compensation is your benefits package. It's your perks. And a lot of times people don't know what those are. So that's my job, is just explaining to you what that looks like and ways that you can advance yourself.
It's funny you say that, because I do my own contracts and I have a buyout. And if I get fired, I'm set for life. So when you threaten me with termination, please do. And you owe me that money 60 days after you fired me. It'll change my life forever. And they know, it's hard line, it's airtight, because they had to agree to it. This is what Tim, they needed me, obviously. They agreed to it.
Yeah, and so that's another thing, just like contracts. I didn't always operate on contracts because I was just doing this as a one-off. But as I've gotten, you know, more clientele, businesses picked up, I've definitely learned to put things in writing and be very specific about those things, the scope of work especially. I'll never forget one of my first resumes that I did for someone who I didn't know personally, someone I was acquainted with, but really was a friend of a friend. I did their resume, great resume. If I looked at it now, I probably would be like, ooh, girl, this some stuff you would change. But for what it was at the time, it was a great resume. It was $150. And the reason was because I put a lot of time and effort in research into crafting this resume for this person. And I think she was in the medical field, which is not, I mean, I'm not in the medical field. So of course I had to do a lot of research. But the template was not editable. And so I didn't communicate that, because I didn't realize that I had to, because I felt like, I mean, look at your resume and look at what I did to your resume. And the time I put in, $150 should be nothing. But to them, it was a problem because they couldn't edit it. So that was something that I learned really early on, was give out all the information that you can think that might be, that might your client may object to, and also put everything in writing so that they have a scope of work to refer back to.
No doubt. And you said you love Black history and Black... Y'all know about Robert Church and Church Parkwood on Beale Street, how the man that saved Memphis after all the diseases in Memphis, the yellow fever, all that stuff. That Black man, and he was light bright, but he didn't run around Memphis right now. Without Robert Church, it would be no Memphis as it is right now.
Now, I know the name, but I can't say that I know the story associated with, so I'm going to have to look that up.
Go, no, on Beale Street, on the non-tourist side, Church Park.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Robert Church. That's the man's name.
That's
Robert.
Why I know the name, because I've seen the sign.
Yeah. On the non-tourist side of where I park on Gayoso, or on the other side of Beale Street to go to Grizzly
Game. Yeah.
Or sometimes I'm going to get the credential in the little Grizzly parking lot on Dr. Martin Luther King Drive over there. Mm-hmm. I still worry about my vehicle. But
I love me some Memphis. I lived there for about 8 years. I went to school there for 4.5 years, and then I lived there for about 4 years after, and then I moved back here. And I mean, it's just, it's different. It is a different place.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I agree.
As much as people say, because they've seen the first 48 and stuff like that. As much as they say it's dangerous, like, I never felt super unsafe in Memphis. And I don't know if that just means it's just because I know I'm covered by God, excuse me, or what, but like, I never just felt super unsafe. And I had, I've had people follow me. I've had people watch my apartment. But I can't say that it's all that people make it out to be when they're like, oh, Memphis is so dangerous. And I'm just like, nah, it's really not more dangerous than any other place.
Nah, it's not worse than, it's not worse than Atlanta. So yeah, I'm used to it. Like, I'll be in Orange, I'll be over there on Bunton, Lamar. I'll be over there.
Somebody's hanging out on Lamar. What you on Lamar doing? Don't tell nobody you
have Lamar. I got folks over along Lamar Avenue, Lamar Ave, 78, going to the Mississippi to Birmingham. That's where I go to Birmingham and Atlanta. Oh, okay. Yeah, but I got folks over there on Lamar and Blackhaven. Okay. I know about Blackhaven too. You know?
Blackhaven. That's funny. Yeah. Before I moved to Memphis, I used to be in this youth organization in high school, and the kids, we would come from all over when we do conference. And I met this guy from Memphis, and he used to call it Blackhaven. I was like, Blackhaven? Why do they call it that? And so when I moved there, I realized it's actually a place called Whitehaven that they renamed Blackhaven. And I ended up working out there off Elvis Presley. And the running joke is like, if you're from Memphis, you've never been to Graceland. And nobody I know has ever been to Graceland.
I've never been either. I don't want to go. Like, no. Yes. I've been to the Memphis Zoo, and that's about it.
Yeah, the zoo was lit on Tuesdays. I don't know if they still do that, but back when I was in school, the zoo was the place
to be
on.
I haven't been to Mud Island either. I ain't been to Mud Island, none of that crap.
Now, I've been to Mud Island, but that was just like walking around, like exercising.
Yeah, so yeah.
Place to live downtown Memphis.
The FedEx Forum and the zoo and mug shots and clicks.
I've never been to Malco Way. Yeah, it's right in front of the movie theater. I used to live over there too, off Riverdale.
Yeah, so I'm in the Orange Mound. I'm in Cordova, sometime Bartlett, East Memphis.
Yeah.
So that's now I've been on Canada Road a few times to some big houses out there. Hey, Lord, yeah. Lord, okay, I see y'all out here bougie and bad out here in the Shelby Gardens over there. I see y'all working over here.
Memphis definitely has the favorite part for me about Memphis is Christmas time, where I used to live off Poplar, close to Census, actually across the street from Census. So if you would go down the back way in our neighborhood towards the school, and go down, I think it's Central, you would see all the beautiful, like the bigger homes have like professional decorators, like, so their yards would be done with all the Christmas lights and all that kind of stuff. And going down, like, I think it's Walnut Grove area, you see all the pretty Christmas
lights. Yeah, I see the deer too in Walnut Grove. The deer on Walnut Grove too. The deer be deep on Walnut Grove at nighttime. Yeah, they do.
That's the thing.
Like, look, I used to be on the radio at 7:30 on Jackson Street, by the graveyard over there.
Yeah, I used to work out there too. I've worked a little bit everywhere. Worked or lived a little bit everywhere in Memphis. I mostly lived in North Memphis though, so. I lived on one end of Cleveland and then the other, so right behind Central High School.
I say, don't end up with 12-1 Poplar. That's all I got to tell people. 12-1 Poplar ain't for you. Don't end up there.
I spent a lot of time in 12-1. As a pre-law minor. So when I would have to take my law classes, I would have to go to different types of court. And it was interesting. Like, I went to a divorce proceeding one time. I went to several proceedings where it's like general sessions and stuff like that. It's very interesting, to say the least.
No doubt. Well, tell us about your single woman Joan lifestyle, because that's an interesting lifestyle to have. Tell us about that and what's inspired that for you as well.
Well, single woman Joan actually started when it was a phrase I coined when I was in my last year of college. I had moved into my own apartment and I had lived off campus for a while. I had a roommate who's a guy. And then I moved into my own apartment by myself. And so it was like my first time living as a single woman. And I just had like what I thought was the best apartment behind Central High School. It was at the top of, it was like only two on my end. So it's me at the top, another guy at the bottom, him and his roommate. And I mean, my apartment was just the bomb. And so everybody would say, like, you know, most college students, their apartment was like a college student's apartment. Mine mm-hmm. looked like a home, and it's very grown up. And so I just felt like I was living my best single woman life, like Sex in the City, girlfriends kind of thing. And so, like, I remember calling my mom one day, just like on the weekend check-in or whatever. And she's like, what you doing? I was like, nothing, girl, getting my single woman Joan on. You know, Joan could keep no man. She, you know, I'm just living my single life. And so ever since then, I started calling this single woman Joan. And she was like my favorite character on Girlfriends. Of course, I wanted to be a lawyer and, you know, all the things. And she was the friend out of all her friends who was like the most like put together financially. She just seemed like the one that like had it together. And I mean, Tony Childs, of course, she was a baller, you know, she lived in her like luxurious apartment and all that. But Joan was the one that was like really in her career field, really about business. And it's like the only thing she felt like she was missing was a man. And mm-hmm. I don't think she got that man, but yeah, that's how it started. And so moving forward, I just like called myself Single Woman Joan on Instagram, and my posts. I'm a pretty transparent person, so I think my following was built from just that transparency in my posts about being a single woman, being in my career, dating, all of the things, and then it just kind of grew from there and turned into a blog. So I started a blog when I moved back here to take care of my grandmother, and so it was kind of cathartic because I didn't have a job. I was here with my grandmother who was, she had dementia. So I was adjusting to that. And I was 25 going on 26. So I didn't really know, like, I was still very immature. I didn't know what that really was. And I don't know. So it was kind of like my escape. And then from there, like I said, I was working for the brokerage, just kind of doing resumes on the side. And then I started a newsletter, which then turned into events. And so then I was like, okay, I think this might be my wheelhouse. This I'm in my bag now. Mm-hmm. This when the Let's Link brunch started. So I started doing the Let's Link brunch, which were like no host events, meaning I didn't pay for it. I just invited, I coordinated it, curated, got people together. And then whatever restaurant I would pick, and then just give people opportunity to network across, meet other women, meet other like-minded women who are interested in the things that they're interested in or interested in other things they may not know about. And that's really just kind of how it got going. I guess 2018 was the first brunch, and I did like a podcast theme. So it was like a talk show. So I was like giving you very much NOPRA. Like I had a couch, I was the host, I had two guests and a co-host. So I had someone come and record. So I had a bottom third with like my name and my little logo. It was really cool. And then from there, that one I did host, but the other ones were no hosts. And then I just kept growing from there, just kept talking about the lifestyle, I had a group me at one time where we were just kind of chatting in and staying acquainted, but it was really mostly about linking other women with each other in a positive light.
No doubt. I can respect them dearly because, you know, you all need an outlet. We have the barbershop, but you all need it in like, you know, capacity that's not, because I feel like the salon was worse than the barbershop. I don't want to even go out to talk about salon syndrome. I have PTSD from that.
Salons. I can't remember the last time I've been in a salon because I have not gotten my hair done professionally in decades, I feel like.
Look, dating a cosmetologist, I got scarred for life. I got dragged like it was nothing. I was nothing.
Yeah, that might not be the safest place for you, brother.
I'm like, you believe you little helpers, you laying up me every night. These helpers tell you what, really?
Helpers. Well, so that is, yeah, I think that is probably how people sometimes look at single woman John. Like, I have some male fans, but I don't have, like, a lot of males have given me feedback. I won't say a lot. I'll say males that have been close to me have told me a lot. Well, you act like a man. Or you act like a nigga. I get that a lot. And I'm just like, no, I'm just very direct. And y'all not used to women being that way.
Actually, I prefer that. Like,
some men do. A lot of men like, don't. Look,
I can't read your mind. I'm not a Vaughn. I can't read your mind, baby. I know what you're thinking. It ain't all right.
Listen, I mean, like, I'm a very direct person. I do recognize that. I won't say I'm tactless, but I have been. Like, I've grown to be. I've learned tact because I'm a very blunt person too. So I just think that a lot of men, they sometimes think that they're equipped to deal with someone being very direct, but then find out they're not. Like, I've been on podcasts with men that hasn't worked out because of that. I've had guests be disrespectful to me because I've asked them to call me my name, and I was just like, hey, my name's Mary, you can call me that. And I've had a guy tell me, no, you were supposed to say, could you please call me Mary, my name is Mary. And I was like, no, I don't have to talk to you like that, nigga, my name Mary, what you mean?
Exactly. Nah, so I mean, look, I'm like this. You know how the church say, come as you are? Come as you are dealing with me. Because I'm a be me coming to you.
Right.
And I say, I'm an acquired taste. You can't usually got, you can
deal with me. That's what I was going to say. I'm an acquired taste.
It's no gray area with me. Either you like me or you don't.
For sure.
If I don't like you, you know it.
The thing that bothers people is that I don't care if you like me.
Correct.
I don't care if you like me. I do care how I present myself just because I'm a professional. Like, mm-hmm. That is one thing people know about me and will tell you. I will definitely try to remain professional in any situation. But another thing that people know about me is I am not for play. Okay? So it's just finding the balance between those two personalities among all the other ones I have. But
yeah, most definitely.
But yeah, it's definitely about finding a balance between those two.
Yeah, you know, so I like this positivity, you know, because I do feel like the salon is a place that we get dragged for no reason, and they bring their stuff home with them, and like, really? You lay with my ass every night.
I think that men think that I'm the leader of the he-man, the she-man, and woman haters club.
I don't think you're that, but I think some of them do have that mindset because they've been burnt by some dust sucker 20 years ago and still holding on to
it. Yeah. And see, I'm of the mindset, like when I gather women, 9 times out of 10, we really talk about men. Start now. Now, the conversation will get there. It's usually some business, some empowerment, just something about yourself, you know.
Yeah, it always ends there one spot, though.
But it'll end up, you know, we talking about men at some point. And so I think what men probably think about me based on my online persona, what they see that I post is they'll say like, I hate men, or I'm very hard on men, or I act like a man, act like a nigga, whatever they want to say. But I'm just direct and I don't like bullshit. And a lot of things that some men qualify as feminine to me is really, you want me to be dumb, or you want me to be foolish. Like, you want me to accept things that I know I'm more, like, I'm deserving of more. So I think sometimes I do kind of struggle with, should I post this? Should I not post that? But then I'd be like, whatever. Because I certainly don't want men to think, like I say, I don't care what people think, because I don't, like, I don't take it personally is what I mean. But I don't want men to think that that's what women come to my events or anything related to me and single woman John for, because I absolutely love men, especially Black men. My thing is just encouraging women to be the best versions of themselves corporately and in the world, so that when you do meet a mate, you show up as your entire self, you know who you are, and you cannot be easily persuaded, but you also know how to like be a helpmate or be a supporter and not always trying to be the boss.
An adversary. I'll be an adversary, always competing. This is my thoughts, Mary, is this. If we eventually want to be as one, right, let's start taking our best parts together. Maybe mm-hmm. your weakness is my strength, my weakness is your strength, and we can. But see, what I found out being the age I am, and that it's like it's like a competition. And I'm like, mm-hmm. we got to come together eventually. We're going to be together, right? Why are we competing against each other? Like,
and see, I've dated men who have been in competition with me and I didn't know. And I think sometimes they didn't even know. So that's been
they insecure with themselves. That's why.
Right. Because they're insecure with themselves. But a lot of them have thought like, oh, I can handle Mary. That's light work, you know, but then find out, no, Mary's going to ask you questions that hold you accountable. Mary's going to, you know, have some thought-provoking conversations with you. She's going to want to know, like, no. So, like, that's the point of contention for most of my relationships with men is when I start asking questions, start holding you accountable, start saying, oh, that don't really add up to me. Then that's when it's like, oh no, she knows too much. I'm gonna have to leave her alone.
Those are brothers who have to play games. See,
exactly.
A Negro like me, I tell her, this is what you get. I am what I am.
It's what you get. Okay.
You know, look here. You have a corporate thug Negro. I'm a CTN, a corporate thug Negro.
CTN.
So, look, I can be a thug and I can also go corporate and do all that stuff, but I'm off the boss man show and the covering the media. I'm just JR from the hood. but I'm got myself together. You feel?
Yeah. So, it's hard trying to, I don't know, it's hard because if you ask me, I'm married from the hood. Like, I'm me, pretty much the same me everywhere I go. I know that they're like, sometimes you do have to code switch. Sometimes you have to read the room and act accordingly. But for the most part, I'm just very down to earth, you know, straightforward. But a lot of men that I've encountered, they think it's cool until it ain't. So.
Those what I call beta males, weak men.
Yes, beta males. I have had some beta males think that they were alpha males. So I have a guy friend. Shout out to Mike. Like one of my only like close guy friends that lives in Nashville and he's older. So he was explaining to me about the last guy I dated. He was like, see what happened was Mary, he was a beta male who thought he was an alpha male. And at first he thought, oh, see, I'm gonna lock Mary down. But then you put that thing on him and the beta male took over. Now he don't know what to do. He just emotional like Carl Thomas. And I'm just like.
So emotional. That soul trips me out.
And now I'm like, oh, okay then. So I'm not going to lie. Some of the stuff like that we do talk about as single women, John, because that's part of the lifestyle. I tried to tell you from the beginning, brother. That's my sentiment.
Some of these like, buzz can't handle real, like, they can't handle truth. You know what I'm saying? Some of these chicks can't handle truth either. Like, this is my thing. I was on a relationship panel, you know, in Louisville a couple weeks ago. I just said, I'm gonna tell you what I said. So look, you gotta love yourself. Somebody turn you down, tell them that's their loss. Now, you know,
I've even gotten out of habit of saying that's their loss. It depends on the situation because there are sometimes where it is a person's loss, but then sometimes that just didn't work out because it wasn't meant to be. It wasn't that just wasn't it. Now any man that I've dated, that's your loss. But most of the times, I don't automatically resign to saying, oh, that's that person's loss, because a lot of times we as women will say that, but you really wasn't no loss. Because sister, you had some issues. And I think that's the thing too, that men don't, people who watch me, the male audience, they don't realize that I'm telling women. Because there are some women who might feel like I'm a little Kevin Samuels with them. And then there might be some women who feel like, oh, Mary's very compassionate with me. But for the most part, like sometimes I'm just like, sister, you're not the victim. You're the problem. It's you.
Yeah, now, you see, longer. I was going for the self-confidence route when I was on that panel trying to give men and women, look, somebody turn you down, that's a loss. Let them turn you down. They don't know what you offer. They missed out. That was how I was gonna give them some confidence, because you know me, I don't give a damn. Like,
right. I think that's why I, you know, took it the other way, because I was just like, I'm not even thinking about, like,
because I'm like, I ain't got no children. I got a radio show. I'm in the public eye. I'm doing things, and you don't want. I'm a unicorn. How many brothers in their 30s ain't got no kids and double degrees?
That's true. So, well, but yeah, that's true.
So if you don't want that, because of my schedule,
but your personality might suck, JR.
It don't.
That's the thing too. We get caught up in is because we look good on paper, we sound good on paper, that we think like we're the ultimate catch. So that's
I'm gonna tell you what it is. I don't take nothing.
Yeah.
You see, I have a legal mind, so I'm gonna analyze what you said to me. Okay. Yeah. You say it is, but you're doing this. Mm-hmm. See.
It doesn't feel logically for you. If it doesn't feel logically,
I'm gonna say, look, this ain't gonna work out, Shawty.
Yeah.
Like, nah, we need to just either be friends or be nothing at all. I can't get...
I'm not gonna be friends with you at all. It's over.
You know, like, I can't. So, because for me, I'm listening to what you're saying to me. Now, watch your action, okay? I'm gonna hear your words, but I'm watch how you move, though. If you ain't moving right, or if I feel like... See, I was listening to this, the Project Pat. Don't save her. She don't want to be saved. I would try to save these women or deal with the hurt and try to solve the hurt. I ain't Dr. Phil. I ain't none of these people. So I had to stop doing that nonsense.
Well.
So, yeah. So in my career, I have evolved to just look. If you got some flaws, I can deal with some flaws. Certainly I can't deal with. And if I got to fight the ghost of 6 men prior to me, I can't do it.
Yes, this shouldn't be in a relationship then if she's still hopping on somebody six men they done dated ago. But that's a real thing, like the dating aspect of it, people be really interested in, because I get the question a lot is, once you get a boyfriend, you gonna still be single woman John? I'm like, yeah, so he married me, I guess then I'll be girlfriend woman John, married woman John, I don't know.
Now, I would say keep the brand.
It would definitely still be single woman John.
Yeah, keep the brand, but yeah, I moved on. I'm still helping y'all. See,
yeah, exactly. there is a blog I follow or a page I follow on Instagram called I've Been That Girl Too, and a lot of it is super relatable situations that we've been in as women. A lot of it speaks to the parts of ourselves that we allow. That make us allow things in relationships that we know we don't deserve, or stick around things that we know, you know, that really don't align with us or our purpose. I'm all about empowering women to just be the best version and be their whole self. Because I believe once you know who you are and you are firm in who you believe yourself to be, you're like unshakable. Like, you're not easily persuaded. And I've also dated some men who were easily persuaded. And if you are a person, that's crazy to me. Anybody can tell you anything, especially if they can tell you something over me. You know what I mean? And their opinion way more than mine. So I've dated men like that too. But that is another form of insecurity that I think sometimes women don't see. Men and women. I'm going to say women. Men and women don't see, because there are some super easily impressionable women, and sometimes that works for men who prey on those type of women. But a lot of times, those types of women find themselves losing themselves in relationships with men too. You get so caught up in that other person because you know who you are, that everything is about them, and then you don't have a life outside of that person.
No doubt. Before we wrap it up, tell the folks how to get at you on the Instagram, the Twitters, the Facebooks, and the LinkedIns when we get out of here tonight, here on the Boss Man Show on your radio.
Okay. Hiding on Twitter. I don't really be on Twitter. But you can find me on Instagram at Single Woman Joan, JOAN. You can also find me on Instagram at the with two E's _ Visionary Mayre, MAYREE, the double E's. You can find me on Facebook at The Visionary Mayre, two E's as well. And then you can visit my website, www.singlewomanjoan.com. So those are all the ways you can get in touch with me, connect with me. Right now I am booked and busy for the rest of September and probably part of October. So my schedule is closed on my website, but you're welcome to send me an email. That information is all over those pages I listed. You're welcome to send me an email for any inquiries, resumes, business consulting. I also do some booking for people, a myriad of things. So people call me Mary the Solutionist. So if you have a problem, I likely can find you a solution.
No doubt. Check out, folks. It's JR with Mary here on the Boss Man Show. She'll be back for sure. We out.